If their population was nuked, they can't retaliate in some cases. You don't expect blowback.
You think terrorism is justified if you're a small enough party? I just want you to know, and I know you're never going to understand this, and that's fine. And for the two people in the audience, every single Israeli will understand what I'm saying. None of your weird pro-Pali dick sucks understand. But the line of argumentation that you're on right now is why Israel, past the second intifada, never listens to the rest of the world when they're critical of things that happen with Israel. Because you will always make excuses for the retarded children Arabs, for the retarded children Hamas, for every single actor in that region to be a retarded fucking child who has no reaction in their kit beyond rape and terrorism and pillaging, and it's all justified.
Okay, wait, hold on. So but there's a useful distinction here.
Let me finish, or I'm banning you from my server. You always have infinite justifications for every actor to do whatever the fuck they want, but Israel has to be the crazy adult in the entirety of every single situation. This is unworkable. Right. No sane country, no sane human being would operate under this rule set anywhere on the fucking planet. Nobody would do it.
I do think, Stephen, you make excuses for Israel.
Okay.
But I also think it's kind of where your brain gets broken a little bit against your own principles. So I want to walk through a couple of analogies to U.S. politics and why you don't apply them to Israel.
Okay.
Let's go back to Charlie Kirk, political violence and like lowering the temperature. Why were you upset when so many people asked you to condemn political violence in those moments where you kind of pushed back on even being asked?
Because I feel like the best world is both sides condemning political violence, and then the middle world is nobody condemning political violence, and the worst world is just one side condemning political violence because it leads the other side to feeling more emboldened.
True. And you also said that, you know, there's a power hierarchy where, you know, the person in the institution with the power should go first, right? That's your claim on Trump.
The reason why I would say Trump should go first isn't because he's the one with the power. It's because these motherfuckers never do. It's my issue. Like, it wasn't a matter of Trump needs to disavow before we do because he's the president of the United States. It was more like Trump needs to disavow because he needs to do it first because I know he won't, I think is the issue.
Yeah, I think you said both. Do you agree, though, that the person with, you know, kind of an asymmetry of power should go first?
In a functioning democracy? No, I think everybody should just do it without question of, like, who said what.
I guess I'm not asking about the democracy as a whole. I'm asking about the obligation of the person in power.
There's no turn ordering here. It's irrelevant, I think. In a normal functioning society, if I see that, like, somebody gets killed, everybody should say, this is horrible. We shouldn't want political violence ever. It shouldn't be a question of, like, has the guy at the top said it first or he's got an obligation to say it first. It should just be everybody.
But I guess if states have some sort of monopoly on violence, is there some sort of, like, duty to restrict?
I mean, it depends on what they're responding to, but I would say, like, as a broad rule, generally the stronger party has a bit more obligation because they've got more capability to defend and to attack.
I know you're, over the past month plus, like, a lot of your rhetoric is changing, but how do you perceive that in relation to the Israeli government?
What is all my rhetoric of mine has changed?
You're shifting on Israel in general.
Okay.
No? In a good way. I would say in a good way because I'm pro-Palestine.
Yeah, I know. Like in a way. I don't think it has. I think you guys are just literally the most brain-broken people on the planet.
But you guys, me, I
think I've had like the same consistent set of criticisms for like a year and a half or longer. And I've had...
I wanted to get here, but like, I don't think that that's fair. I think you've criticized, for example, Republicans for kind of like
dressing up. Issue is that like as the war has gone on, the behavior has become more and more and more unacceptable. But in your mind, because you're incapable of updating your opinion in real time because you decided everything that you were
going to
do.
Well, you don't know my opinion yet.
I don't care. I've already decided this. No, I am projecting this on you. You decided on October 7th, this is how I'm going to feel forever about this. And I'm updating my feelings about things as time has gone on.
This is part of your problem. You're bucketing everybody who's pro-Palestine.
Let me finish my one statement and then you can say what you want to say, okay? Because you've already said something retarded. So that's why I'm responding to the retarded thing you said, okay? As time has gone on and I've said that the behavior of Israel, I think, is less defensible. I think that these things are not defensible. In your mind, you're viewing it as like, oh, this is good. He's changing his mind about the things that he said about Israel. But that's not true. If you were to ask me right now, do you think that Israel's behavior was acceptable on October 30th or whatever? I would say, yes, absolutely. My opinion on that behavior hasn't changed. But my opinion on Israel as it stands right now, I think the behavior has been significantly less defensible over the past year. But that's not like me around to the opinions of the people who have had the same opinion since October 7th.
I do think there are some things you said that you might reconsider in light of what you've seen as a continued behavior that would have told you something about their principled stand. But I don't...
Go for it. Okay. What's the next part you want to go to this?
So the power hierarchy thing is one piece of it. If you have thoughts on that, let me know. But like, that's one of the things that I think, you know, I kind of want to build on. The second thing is what I'll call the choosing the bad way framework that I think is happening a lot in politics. When we talk about ICE and immigration, often you say, I would say that we do need enforcement, but we're displeased with the way that it happens. Why are you displeased with the way that it happens in the US right now?
I know you're trying to draw analogies, but I don't know how this is going to map to the Israel thing, but I would say that I'm displeased with immigration enforcement right now in the United States is because, one, from an ideological logical perspective, the people carrying out the enforcement seem to be reveling in the cruelty of it all. So I think that their hearts are definitely not in the right place when it comes to the enforcement, number one. I think from a process and procedure thing, I think that the procedures are largely unlawful, if I'm being generous, or like just downright crazy criminal, like when it comes to administrative warrants to break into homes, or when it comes to just murdering, you know, like citizens that are protesting, like this is not good. I think the amount of money we're spending on it is stupid. I think the arguments supporting it are unsupported. Like the idea that these people are hurting us economically. I think the lies that we're telling about the threats that illegals are posing to the United States, and then all the other policy, like our detention of people and sending them to CCOT and everything, like all of the stuff that spawned from it, I would say all of these things are bad things.
I'm going to say this in the most, you know, kind of brain broken sounding way, just to, you know, kind of get you to respond. Why doesn't this not apply to the IDF in Israel?
Doesn't apply to the IDF in Israel because I think the threat to Israel is a real one. The illegal immigration.
Does the threat mean that you can revel in cruelty?
No.
You said that the ICE revels in cruelty. Do you think Israel, the IDF, and certain portions of the populace in Israel revel in cruelty?
Revel in cruelty the same way that the Republicans do when it comes to.
Yeah, or even worse.
As a whole, the population? No.
I didn't say as a whole. I said segments and the IDF.
Segments? Yeah, of course, there are going to be some people.
A significant portion of the, what's called the power hierarchy.
Is this like the far right people of the Netanyahu?
This is far right. This is the IDF. We've seen their WhatsApp leaks where they're sharing.
IDF, every single person has been like in the IDF or whatever. Like there are people that definitely. Yeah, I mean, I'm almost definitely going to say
combatants.
Yes. Yeah, but like this is going to be true of almost every single like military operation.
So should we be okay with reveling in cruelty?
No, I don't think it's good. But I mean, like, do you support Ukraine?
Of course.
Ukrainians absolutely revel in the cruelty.
Hold on, but there's a different boundary level where I'd still support Ukraine over Russia, even though, for example, a lot of them
are. Wait, I'm not even talking about supporting or not supporting. Obviously, I support Ukraine very strongly, right? But the Ukrainian soldiers absolutely revel. Like, we're getting music videos of poor Russian homeless fucking 40-year-olds being murdered by drones, right? Like, they revel in it, right?
Right, but then we go back to the power hierarchy, who has kind of an ability, right? And this is where you're talking about ICE. So,
I don't know if take this, I think when I'm reveling in cruelty, I think I think to some extent, I think it's a function of your justification for war in going into the conflict. So let me say that, like, you should never revel in it. Like, that's not good. I don't think anybody should ever revel in it. But like, in the same way that people clap and cheer when a dad steps out and murders a guy who assaulted his daughter or whatever, right? And people revel in that. They love that. It's because they feel like the dad's cause here is much more justified than
murder. Yeah, but hold on. Also, we all would generally agree with that. We wouldn't agree with a lot of the reveling in cruelty that the IDF does. They revel in kind of civilian death and taking over hospitals. We've seen WhatsApp group where they take pictures of aid workers' bodies and kind of celebrating.
I think that's significantly more rare. There are people among especially the far right in Israel that do this, but I think the majority of reveling you're going to see are people who are under the assumption, right or wrong, that these people are like Hamas terrorist fighters or are significant supporters of Hamas, such that they're helping them in military missions or whatever, which still isn't good, but I think it's significantly different.
You're right, but this goes to a later point I want to make, which is that like this is part of a framework where you often ask, even with the last caller, you're like, what should we do? And I'm the one critiquing these people. You spend 90% of your time yelling about pro-Pali people, buckling them all in the same group and basically attacking that side of the movement. Mm-hmm. You could be the pro-Palestine person that has the right solution, that takes the nuanced and research approach. You do not proliferate or promote or amplify any of what is real on that side of the movement, right?
I have no, because there's nothing real on that side of the movement. The entirety of the movement is poison and it's bad. It's dog shit. I'm sorry, but it is. I have no problem if I'm debating a far right.
Can we define the movement? Can we define the movement for a
second? Yeah, it's a bunch of fucking retards that have never stepped foot on any soil in any country that is even on the Mediterranean their entire lives, let alone fucking Israel, let alone the Gaza Strip or the West Bank or anything else. Yeah, it's a bunch of people that are fucking retards that have no concept of how that thing should end.
What movement are you part of?
I have no fucking idea. I don't know, the center left, I guess,
maybe,
for Israel.
Maybe that's the thing I'm suggesting, right? What if you could, and I'm not suggesting this in a big way, but this is the critique I have of you. You're like going, hey, here are all the flaws in this side of the argument. Here are though all these truths. And these truths are things that you and I, for example, might have agreement on in this conversation. But you do not spend time amplifying, digging into, researching.
These are loser positions. Nobody wants that position. That's a loser position. Like, if I were to say—
How do you know? You haven't tried.
Because everybody says it. Because it's already lost. My position would be, my position should be the negotiations that were supposed to happen at Tapas Summit after the Clinton parameters. Those were a set of parameters.
I'm talking about now.
Shut the fuck up. Now it would work. But those are parameters that Israelis wouldn't agree to and Palestinians wouldn't agree to. And every Zionist would tell you that they are suicidal, that they're never giving up that much land in the West Bank, that they're never letting the Palestinians have their own government. Look at October 7th, that they're going to kill us all. They have to be militarily restricted. And all the Palestinians will say, we're never going to agree to forfeit our infinite right of return. We're never going to make deals with a genocidal apartheid state that wants to divide the lands of Palestine. Like, if that's a loser position. Nobody will agree to that. There's the whole issue.
What do we want to do today? What movement are you part of today? When you go to these historical points, part of the problem with those historical points is that we're not talking about what's happening on the ground. A lot of the things that we just spoke about, for example, the reveling in cruelty, or
if you want me to give you a solution or what I think I would push for, I can give you that, but there's literally nobody that pushes for it. Like, even the two-state solution is...
I'd love to hear.
It would just be a retreading of the basically the things that were set up by the Clinton parameters.
Tomorrow with Israel, not like be, if you were
okay,
czar.
Sure, if... Wait, are you assuming that I'm the president that I can snap my fingers and this is what I make everybody
agree to?
Let's assume
you're the president of the United States.
If I was the president of the United States, then I would more or less push on this issue that there should be the Palestinian Authority should be the unified ruling body of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. It can't be divided anymore. That's fucking retarded, okay? Once the Palestinians, you have them hold a new election, and if they vote for Hamas again, I don't know, suck your own dick. Fuck it. Fuck you. You have them hold an election. Once the Palestinians vote, once you have a leader that represents the Palestinian people, whether you do a parliamentary or whatever, that leader then has to go to the United States, and then whoever is elected as the leader right then and there, if it's still Netanyahu of the United States, has to go to the United States, and then these two motherfuckers are locked in a room, and they are forced to negotiate on end terms that are probably going to resemble the Clinton parameters. There's going to be two separate countries. There's going to be a slow transition of Palestine into its own independent state that's allowed to have a military and all that other bullshit in ways that the United States and Israel and Palestine can collaboratively work on to make sure everybody feels safe. There's going to be land swaps so that the land and the territory size probably more or less resembles the total amount of land that they had allotted at the end of the, or before the 67 war began. There's going to be some negotiated right of return for Palestinian citizens. Maybe 20,000, 30,000 are numbers that Olmert was kind of floating. Maybe it'll be something like that. It's not going to be all 7 million or however many people that have never stepped foot in this country in their life who think they have a right to return there. It's going to be a total abandonment or withdrawal from Israel from Area A and B. Like, it's going to be a separate country now, so the Palestinians don't get to run it. It seems like, for better or for worse, I don't know what they call it, the WAC or whatever situation they've got on the Temple Mount, where I think it's Jordan right now that basically runs it so that Israelis are able to go and come on the Western Wall, and then Muslims are able to go and come inside Al-Aqsa Mosque or whatever, and they can both enjoy their fucking thing. That would be like the negotiated summit that I would push both these motherfuckers towards. Essentially something like that. And then if they don't do it, if the Palestinian delegation won't agree to anything, then you disconnect fucking UNRWA and you tell them Netanyahu's gonna fucking run a train on your entire fucking bullshit territories until you guys are all gone. And if Israel doesn't agree to it, then you cut all of your fucking funding from the Israeli military and you start telling them that we talked to Iran and Saudi Arabia and these guys are gonna go both work together and be your friends, and now you guys are on your own and the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt are gonna come and fucking run a train on your people until you're all gone. Then it would be some kind of thing like that. But that solution that I just gave, nobody wants it. The Palestinians
don't. You do not promote that solution. I think that solution is great, but you are not.
I've literally brought. What do you mean?
No, no.
It just doesn't come up that much because nobody wants the solution. The Palestinians don't want it, and the Israelis don't want it.
You're the architect of your media environment. You, for example, have talked about how the media environment on the right in the United States and on social media and with the creators and the influencers create something downstream in the polity. You also.
Upstream on Israel Palestine. I'm reactive. What? I have to react to what comes down the pipeline. I don't get to set the tone.
How you react and what you emphasize does impact the polity that you influence.
Okay.
Do you disagree with that?
I feel like these are the positions I've more or less pushed for like a year and a half. So I don't know what you want me to say.
Hold on. If I had the opposite view, why do you think that is? Am I being completely irrational? Am I just like
because
blind?
The majority of the people that one is because your entire media environment is fucking obsessed with pro-Pali shit. Okay,
Destiny, I watch you. I don't watch Hassan.
My media is obsessed with pro-Pali shit. Right?
Okay, I don't watch pro-Pali shit. You have to stop making the same assumptions of this group of people.
Me?
This group of people
wait,
is a large.
Do you watch me?
Oh my goodness.
Do you watch me?
Yeah, unfortunately.
I watch all pro-Pali shit. So our media environment is all pro-Pali shit, okay? So the reason why I come off as being anti-pro-Pali is probably going to be the same reason why people think I'm cruel on healthcare, cruel on housing, and cruel on minimum wage. It's because most of the people I'm responding to are on the opposite side of me for that.
Now, I don't think those things. I am a left of center... Yeah, yeah, but I'm talking... this is why you have to stop bucking everybody. There are reasonable people you could reach on this issue.
I'm not I'm just telling you this is the general impression that people have of my positions. Is because
I'm not asking you to tell me why you feel frustrated. I'm asking you why, if you control how you react and what you emphasize, you can't, in acknowledgement of the power hierarchy we just talked about, the reveling cruelty we just talked about, and the fact you see solutions that Netanyahu and the Israeli government are not at all leading us towards. They're sabotaging everything that you suggested should be the solution. You are not influencing your polity to think differently about how they pressure policymakers,
because
other influencers.
Because most of the people on this side of the internet already have that perspective that Israel is sabotaging any attempts to work towards peace, which I generally agree with. But then they think that the Palestinians are innocent players in all of this, or players with no agency, which is totally fucking wrong.
I don't know if you know this, but a lot of the way you speak and the way you're clipped and the way you're used and the media environment is used as apologetics for Israel, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, I'm aware of that.
Right, so you could change
that. I would rather be apologetic for Israel on my side of the internet than joining the lump, brain-dead, cancerous mob of people.
I didn't suggest you join anything, right?
I'm just telling you that I'm never going to be on this part of the internet and start giving a ton of criticisms of fucking Israel. All of these are stated. All of the people know these things. Like, there's just not... What, am I just going to throw my voice...
By the way, no, they don't. You say that, right? But if you went to a lot of individuals who are low information, and you... And again, your stream is a good example of these people. Hassan's stream is a good example of these people. They're low information on this issue. Right. And so a lot of their assumptions can be changed if they're shown some version of evidence. This is like the Ben Shapiro, kind of compliment to you of, oh, you do your research on stream. And I think that's one of the great gifts you give to your audience. But a lot of the research you do are the version that are apologetics, because you're fighting what is, yes, I agree with you, a bad view or a bad movement that has a bad set of solutions, when you could be promoting. And when I say promoting, by the way, it's not just, oh, here's my solution, here's what I think. It's also saying, I'm going to take seriously the critiques of the IDF and of Israel that have to do with the same principles I ask my leader, my audience to take about leadership in the United States and in the right. And by the way, you've convinced them that those principles apply. And if you apply those same principles abroad, you can see and you can start to, have a call to action that we should be acting differently to persuade a different set of behaviors.
Okay, give me an example of how this would play out, I guess.
Yeah, I think that you should take really seriously the cruelty, the revelry in cruelty. I think that the way that the IDF and the far right, and I've been exposed to some of this just based on where I'm in New York. I think if you highlighted some of that, kind of revelry, the issue is that when we talk about the IDF versus Hamas, right, or the IDF versus, kind of how we discuss Gaza, when we don't highlight or verify talk about the downsides of how the IDF or Israel acts, what we're doing is we're taking one population, the IDF and Israel, and we're saying, look, we can justify their bad actions. When the bomb gets close to that journalist that almost got hit, kind of 2 weeks ago, or even with the apartheid courts, there are reasons that they're going to want these things. But we don't do it to the other side, right? What happens is, ultimately, your audience, more than, let's just use the extreme example, Hassan's audience, will view every Israeli action with a sense of skepticism that they don't apply to the other side, right? Or a sense of, like, I'm not sure this is what Israel really meant to do. They'll do a lot of apologetics. They'll do a lot of, give them the benefit of the doubt. That sort of thing, I think, poisons your audience against what has really shown itself, which is a lot of misbehavior on the side of Netanyahu, Ben-Gvir, Smoltrich, and the Israeli government, because you've constantly told people to be so, so skeptical. And you do not, I'm just going to tell you, you do not do the same level of research to go, look, I think this is about the flower massacre, but here's what's real over here. And here's what's, kind of the dynamics of this WhatsApp group that leaked. And here's this, why this is fucked up for the IDF to be quoting or tweeting something to a foreign government. It gives your audience this default where they just do not take seriously what Israel and the IDF do, but they do take seriously because you say every single time anything happens, on their side, you kind of point to them and you go, look, this is how Hamas uses aid. This is how Hamas uses steel. And so they go, great. Every time anyone in Gaza does anything wrong, it's clearly wrong. That's one example.
I don't understand why I would lend my voice in the current media environment to criticizing, Israeli behavior, which I do to some extent. But, like, the overwhelming amount of people right now who are part of this media environment, like, literally don't even think Hamas or Hezbollah do war crimes, or don't think that they do any bad things. There's, like, an infinite set of excuses. So when, like, all of the excuses and everything else have been given for them, And I do provide justification sometimes for why I think the Palestinians fight the way that I do. I think even shortly after the October 7th stuff, I said, if those terrorist attacks happened in the West Bank, I basically would have no sympathy for Israel. But obviously the fact that they happened on the territory proper and everything is pretty bad. It sounds like you just want me to scream Israel bad. Tell me the harsh truth. Like, yeah, go ahead. Yes, tell me.
I'm going to give the harsh truth of when you spend so much time with Hassan and the 9/11 statement, mm-hmm. I think that's one of the examples of you not doing a favor to your audience.
What are you talking about?
Because you just made the same exact statement that he was intending to make, and you know that.
What is my statement on the Hassan 9/11?
Your statement as it relates to October 7th, and
What do I say about Hassan's 9/11 statement?
You just use it as a way to critique the pro-Pali movement and Hassan as being brain broken.
What do
I say? That's all you do with that statement.
I'm like the only person on the internet. This is why I hate being. You have convinced me that I will never ever take these semi-charitable positions of the Palestine.
Come on.
Because I shouldn't. I'm the only motherfucker on the internet. I'm the only person on the internet that defended Hassan's 9/11 take, and I think I even did it yesterday, and you still think I super.
You do it. You do it after the critique, you do it after you make fun of, I'm the only person that defends this, even my own fan base.
You guys think I attack him over this? You guys are mind raped. Can you admit to me, can you just admit that you're mind raped by lefties on all this discourse? You're mind raped. This is insane to me. It's crazy.
I'm having a good faith conversation with you, but I'm telling you in good faith that you do it after.
You're mind raped.
I'm not mind raped. You're mind raped.
Oh, shit.
Anyway, hold on. So let's just take this to another place, which is, you know, the October 7th thing aside. When you say, I don't know, because these people are already convinced that Hamas doesn't do this or Palestinians don't do that. I don't think that's true, Stephen. What I think is happening is they are sympathetic to an extreme. You're right that their sympathy is going to a place that it shouldn't, in kind of not understanding the context of the situation. Same thing the other side is doing, right? But the challenge when you say, why should I lend my voice to that side of the argument? Your critique of them that would be accurate is that the nuance of either the history of the region and or, real politics of the region would lead us to some version of a complicated conversation where I have to go like... I go to like what we would do if we were to remove aid from Israel. We can't tomorrow remove all aid from Israel. But what we can do is we can have a set of conditions that would otherwise have consequences for individual cabinet members in the Israeli government, right? These are the complicated conversations we'd have to have where we go, hey, who is responsible, for example, when you talk about the settlers that you disagree with, right? Who's ultimately responsible? I don't actually know this. Who's ultimately responsible, do you know, in the Israeli cabinet for allowing those settlers to generally, you know, kind of do what you say is worse than Hamas?
Yahweh.
The structure of how the West Bank is set up.
Cabinet member, right?
What?
There's ultimately some cabinet member who would be responsible for enforcing against that.
I think structurally it just plays out that way just because of how... It's because in the West Bank, it's because Israeli citizens get to have civil courts versus their military courts, so they get to escape a lot of the accountability.
Okay, but I assume that similar to the U.S., there's probably a head of some sort of ministry that we would be able to point to that say, look, you're not actually enforcing what even
the
law might say.
The enforcement, it's like saying, like, who's responsible for not charging a white person of crimes of owning a slave?
Okay, fair enough. Why don't we decide to target three people in the Israeli government about that issue and sanction them?
We should. I've said this. Like, I think it was, I don't know if Biden did it, but I'm pretty sure under Obama, we were sanctioning individual people that lived in the West Bank from the United States.
Just individual people in the Israeli government, in the same way that we did to that one guy, you know, who was flying back and forth and, you know, Netanyahu went crazy for like 3 years trying to get him to get his visa approved.
Why not? Because sanctioning members of the government for a policy your country has is I don't even know if that's
We have to take new measures in the same way that in the United States.
I don't know if the West Bank is the most extreme situation of all the U.S. allies. I think I would probably look to sanction
all the situations.
A pointless fucking critique. Cool. Let's just sanction every single fucking person then that does things we don't like. Do you see how fucking retarded that
100%.
Sounds? Okay, great. Then we should do that. I agree then with you. We should, as long as we sanction every U.S. ally.
That's not what I'm saying. So I'm going to give you as ridiculous a response as what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Right? This is an issue that is active. This is an issue that is international and global. This is an issue that a lot of people are concerned about.
Yes.
Whether you like it or not, it's not the same thing as if Japan is doing something we don't care about. It's not the same thing.
What about the Turkish people constantly killing fucking Kurdish people?
Make the argument for me. Why do you think I'm not as concerned?
No Jews, no news. That's why. Because nobody gives a fuck. Because nobody cares. Because nobody gives a fuck.
No,
that's the reality.
No. Why else? Why else might it be?
Let's see. In my most charitable reading, It would be because in the United States, if we care about our leadership and our domestic policy and our ability to lead the world, we have to respond to things that are getting the interests of our population. So if the United States population is highly interested in what's going on in Israel, especially with the rest of the world, it undermines the U.S. position internationally for us not to hold those people more accountable. Even if Turkey might be doing things that are necessarily worse, the fact that Israel is so much more in the spotlight means that we should hold them to a greater level of accountability because it can downstream damage us. Yes?
That's one good new reason, but the two reasons that I actually have. One is that a lot of our support for Israel, not only in the form of cash, but also in how we act, for example, the UN, explicitly excuses and enables this behavior. We do not do the same thing in most of the other cases that you're talking about. So this is like this stuff we are a partner
sure.
in.
I agree with you. Hold on. But this is why I would never give the suggestion, okay? But I could. But if somebody were to say this, okay, we should condition U.S. aid to Israel incredibly stringently upon their behaviors in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. But I also think we should condition all of the U.S. aid and the UNRWA funding to the Gaza Strip on the behavior of people in Hamas. Do you think there's anybody that would agree to both sides of that?
No, I wouldn't even. But let's talk about that for a second. I think that's interesting. Why would you think of that as being reasonable as a way to... again, this goes back to the power hierarchy thing, right? We have one power that's a state power. We have one power that controls resources in the region, has allies in the region, has us as an ally. And we have another power where we keep referring to Hamas as if it's like their true desire, right? We look at this people that is starved, that is...
They
are diminished.
They lack freedom. They're not starved.
There we go.
They live in an open-air prison. They lack freedom of movement. They don't have their own country.
Can't look at Hamas as being a representation of their truest will, right? It is unfortunate, and it is there, but it's not a representation of their truest will.
No,
so why
I can't.
Do you think
there's not going to. I'm not going to. It's not. I didn't say it doesn't have to be symmetrical for you to have bare understanding to both sides.
You just made the suggestion that it should be symmetrical in terms of how you enforce the UN.
I think that 18-year-olds should be given food to eat, and I think 4-year-olds should be given food to eat. That doesn't mean I think both parties are of the same symmetry, just because my one behavior would be the same. I think that if we give a fuck ton of money to somebody, then I think that they should be expected not to fucking rape and murder and kill civilians, whether that's the IDF and Israelis or Hamas.
But we wouldn't do that by simply saying that all aid is preconditioned on something that Hamas has power over, right? We would be more nuanced. By the way, I would suggest...
Hamas is the governing body, and they're the government of the Gaza Strip.
Steven, this goes back to something that I think is like how we choose to do things. And I think this is the flaw right now with the right wing in the US, tech in the US, the global economy, all this stuff. We could decide to be particular about Hamas and everything you just said. And okay, if you don't do these things, here's resources you're not going to get. But then send in aid and our protection, no matter how much money it costs, we could get aid to people who needed it in Gaza. Do you disagree with that? Do you think that if the United States had the willpower, we could safely get aid without Hamas's full cooperation to citizens of Gaza?
No.
Innocent citizens of Gaza?
No.
Why? Why?
Because I think you guys think that Hamas is like a rant. It's like Al Qaeda.
Not you guys. I'm just me.
Because Hamas is the government of the Gaza Strip. Everything flows through them. It has to. They're the governing body there. They're the government of the Gaza Strip.
What do you think that means? Why does that mean that we, as the United States, with the most powerful, and Israel, by the way, with some of the most advanced intelligence?
How would you distribute it? They're the ones that have the registry for where everybody lives. They're the one that run all the hospitals.
You'd have a bunch of registry sites, and you'd send a bunch of troops to sit alongside those sites, and you'd make sure that ultimately citizens, as they're coming in, are protected as they pass a certain line. And if they at all are harmed on the way back across that line, then you'd attack Hamas.
Okay. So we would just do an even more hardcore occupation than what the
IDF
already does. Because you're talking about taking over the region. You're talking about...
I'm talking about feeding people for the sake of feeding people.
Okay, true. I agree with that. That's just based. We should do that.
You say that. Why is that unreasonable?
Because it's retarded.
Tell me why.
Because you're retarded.
No, why? Why?
Because you're talking about an entire takeover of a country. You want to take over the country. You're saying it like...
I didn't say takeover. Yes, I said at certain sites. We currently have these sites, don't we?
You're retarded.
We currently have these sites.
You feed an entire population of 2 million people.
Do we have these sites today? Are there aid sites today?
That function like this? No. No, not anywhere
near. Are there aid sites that the IDF has supervision over?
A little bit, and all of them are being accused of murdering Palestinians.
Yeah, because the IDF shoots at them, right? So why don't we go instead at those aid sites and do everything I just said?
Because those aid sites are temporary sites that were set up during the war.
That doesn't prevent anything I just said from happening.
Hold on. Are you arguing that we should have set up temporary aid sites to feed people during the war or during like peacetime?
I'm talking about right now. Let's just do right now.
We tried, and it didn't work.
What? No, we didn't. No, we didn't. IDF
we literally set up a whole fucking pier where we were supposed to bring shit in, and it fucking deteriorated and fell apart. That was built, I'm pretty sure, with the Marine Corps, the Navy, or whatever.
Wait, wasn't that like 2 years ago?
Yes. or like a year
what
ago.
What happened? I don't remember all the events.
I think it eventually just deteriorated. It wasn't maintained. There was too much chaos in the area. It just couldn't be adequately controlled.
Was the U.S.? Did we control it or did IAF control it?
I don't remember who had full. I think we either had joint or shared control or...
I'm going to guess that we could do a better job this time using the same size that IDF currently uses. No?
Shit.
What? Am I crazy?
No, you're right. We should do a better job.
Wait. With the U.S. military was involved, instead of the IDF, wouldn't we say that they could do a better job?
Not necessarily, no.
Why?
Because you think...
Shouldn't we try?
Yes, we should. We should try and do a better job.
Okay.
True.
No, that's a serious suggestion, though. Shouldn't we use those same sites and then say, hey...
You didn't even let me respond to your question. You asked, why can't the U.S. do it? You just say, U.S. military. The U.S. military is very good at doing certain special missions and at blowing shit up. But you're talking about administering to a region of 2 million people, and you're talking about security, you're talking about intelligence, you're talking about distribution of food and aid, you're talking about keeping track of like the civilian population, you're talking about potentially local law.
Instead, right now, we currently have an inability to address the situation. So I don't know why everything you just said is unreasonable for us to spend and do, because we're currently spending and doing,
I'm not
and
saying
there's bad stuff happening.
I didn't say anything is unreasonable. I'm just saying that you're suggesting this like it would be trivially easy, and the only reason we're not doing it is because...
I don't think it's trivial. I think it's obvious.
Okay.
Base. And I think you could, when you're reacting, as you said, two things, state more obvious solutions. And I think that would help people that you, for example, point to and go, hey, your only solutions,
you're
you just said it for the entire stream
solution.
Before me.
The obvious solution is we just need to try harder to make sure all the people get fed.
That was just one part of the conversation.
You chose to bring it up. That was your part. That was your point.
Hold on. And you spent the rest of this stream talking to people and saying none of you and none of the ProPally people, etc., have any solution because you're all dumb and you're all mind raped and all this other shit and blah, 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 blah. And the only thing you want is the destruction of the Israeli state. I'm telling you that there are people, and you know there are people, you can yell at me all you want, who would listen to something like a more obvious solution and other obvious solutions and other critiques of bad solutions and take seriously the idea that there's other middle grounds. You have asked for it this entire stream of other callers.
I understand what you're saying, but you are the perfect representation of what I'm talking about.
Why?
Because everything you said has been mischaracterized, retarded. You think I criticize Hassan for his 9/11 takes? You think that the solution to the current humanitarian crisis is that the U.S. needs to go in and try harder and then everybody will be actually
You're brain broken over this. You're so brain broken over this that you think I mischaracterized you. I did not mischaracterize anything you said. I immediately corrected myself on that. It was just after you make fun of him. Then, yes, sometimes you're like, and by the way, he's kind of right about this.
I just started screaming at you because how frustrated it is you would bring up my take on
it. Fan off, so what? You have to pay a little bit of a tax. You have to pay a small tax. So what?
It's not about paying a tax. It's that you can't even characterize my position on Hassan's 9/11 take.
Hold on. I'm not. Who do you think I am? Do you think I'm a...
I haven't communicated well enough.
What do you think I represent here? Do you think after this, I'm now the person who goes and tweets about Destiny's takes on Palestine and Israel? No.
No, I think that you're an average, probably Destiny fan, but most of you guys are significantly to the left of me on like Israel-Palestine thing, which is just a thing that I've accepted at this point.
Right, but what do you think happens, right? Because you're going, that's not going to work because all of you are brain broken. What do you think that means?
It's a waste of time to talk about it, and I'm praying every single day that we missed one of the Iranian enrichment sites and that this can all be over soon and we don't have to worry about them anymore.
As an Iranian, I hope that doesn't wind up being the case. But I will say, I think your pessimism about this is misplaced. I agree with you that in your chats, right, I think you're dealing with the most aggressive people, in Hassan's chat, the most aggressive people. But at this point, a lot of your social media impact and your downstream impact is through clips, is through other things that are happening in the world, right? It's not necessarily... Why are you bringing up my tweet? What did I say? Yeah, okay, let's do it. You want to do this one?
Wait, did I bring something up?
Hmm?
Wait, what?
Who's get someone out?
I see one of my tweets.
I ran out of streaming in here. Somebody brought this up. Don't worry about it. For real, you're good.
Well, you don't want to do that?
Brain broken. You're brain broken. It's fine. But you also said that you're Iranian. Are you Muslim or?
No, I'm Okay.
You're in America, though?
Yeah. Okay. Grew up in Jersey.
Okay, that's cool.
Do you want to do that one? We can. Why I'm upset at Zelensky for that?
Sure.
Let's hear it.
When we see his language about Iran, one of the things, and the same thing would be true if he said something about Gaza that was out of band, we would want to understand the relationship between
asymmetric power. What did he say in here about Iran?
Let me reread the tweet.
Also, asymmetric power. Bro, this is the lefties that attack me all the time that use this excuse like, oh, we're a small...
I'm saying lefties. I'm a neoliberal. You really can't use that on me.
Can you listen to the words that I'm saying? I didn't say you're a lefty. I'm saying that these are the excuses that smaller fucking loser content creators use all the time.
Don't use lefties next to me. Just critique me directly.
I'm not...
Okay, go ahead. Don't be mad, Dustin. It's okay.
I'm not critiquing you. I am critiquing you, but I'm saying that the argument that you're using here with regards to every Arab or Persian or Turkish person or whatever the fuck, everybody in the Middle East, is the same argument that the lefties use when they're harassing people on the internet, where they're saying, well, I'm a smaller content creator. Therefore, I can say the most unhinged, deranged shit about you imaginable, but you can't say anything about me or else it's harassment because you're a larger content creator.
I didn't defend Iran saying something. I critiqued Zelensky for saying something. That's completely different than what you're saying.
Reread this tweet and tell me what
was
he
said.
Was
this the one I quoted?
Yes. Hold on. I'll be back. Read Zelensky's tweet. Tell me what's objectively wrong. Let me use the restroom. Hold on.
Moon, do you think Israel is evil?
I hate him. Hate them all. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So first, Simon, I think important context. I came here when I was a year old. My grandfather was the equivalent of the attorney general for the Shah of Iran back in the day.
Okay.
And so I hate both the Shah's former version of Iran, based on my family's retelling of the situation, as much as I hate the Islamic Republic. I think both were bad. Hmm. The line here that is flawed is no one should be allowed to block such globally significant different sea lanes, whatever, whatever. Where basically he's saying, you know, what I read this as and the thing I take issue with is Iran is in the wrong and whatever needs to happen next. To prevent them from doing what they're doing is justified. That's what I read here. And I think that's flawed because what we're doing in Iran is a violation of sovereignty. Even if you hate, as I do, the Islamic Republic, and my family is essentially were under house arrest for, how many years was that? Like 12 years under the Islamic Republic post their participation in the Shah's regime. It is still true that the sovereignty of that country and of individuals in that country is violated. And the idea that Zelensky, who is at the other side of an asymmetry, would say, despite that fact, what they're doing is so wrong that it justifies further violation of their sovereignty, I think is completely crazy and a misunderstanding of how the same situation, our ability to have sovereign nations or sovereign populaces, is being violated in his situation. That's the flaw.
Gotcha.
What do you think about that?
It's easily one of the most brain broken retarded takes I've ever heard in my life. But
why? Why?
The idea that appealing to the United Nations, first of all, which is the international body of law,
you do not care about the United Nations.
You do not care about the United Nations?
Because the United Nations does not has not sanctioned for the past several years.
Is this my tweet? Am I Zelensky? Am I Zelensky?
Never mind. Go ahead.
I Zelensky? Yes or no?
Yes.
I am Zelensky.
You are Vladimir Zelensky.
Okay, so you think that me, Zelensky, I don't care about the United Nations? Why? What evidence do you have of that? That I don't care about the United Nations? Have I done things to violate? Okay, thank you. So you're saying, you won't even seriously engage, okay? So Zelensky is appealing to the United Nations to ensure that the Strait of Hormuz is not closed. He can't do that. Why?
His only tweet about the conflict. Or his only statement about the conflict. His other statement about conflict was very anti-regime, if I remember correctly.
Why the fuck? Okay. Why the fuck?
Which, by the way, is justified because he's getting hit by stuff, obviously, from Russia that's being manufactured in Iran.
Then why would you even have a problem with any gay tweets?
Because I think he's missing the asymmetry in the two situations. I don't think he needed to tweet about this at all.
What asymmetry? You're an asymmetry cuck. Oh, my God.
I am.
How tall are you?
5'10 and a half.
Can somebody who's 5'10 and a quarter rape your girlfriend, but it's okay because of the asymmetry between you and the guy? This is how fucking retarded your statements sound. Like,
I didn't
say
everything.
Iran, because of asymmetry, can shut down one of the most important global oil outpourings in the entire world?
If Trump had nuked Iran afterwards and a post-nuke, post-fallout government closed the Strait of Hormuz as retaliation for the next 10 years, do you think that's justified?
No.
You're brain broken.
Okay.
If their population was nuked, they can't retaliate in some guys? You don't expect blowback?
You think terrorism is justified if you're a small enough party? I just want you to know, and I know you're never going to understand this, and that's fine. And for the two people in the audience, every single Israeli will understand what I'm saying. None of your weird fucking pro-Palestinian dick sucks understand. But the line of argumentation that you're on right now is why Israel, past the second intifada, never listens to the rest of the world when they're critical of things that happen with
why?
Israel. Because you will always make excuses for the retarded children Arabs, for the retarded children Hamas, for every single actor in that region to be a retarded fucking child who has no reaction in their kit beyond rape and terrorism and pillaging, and it's all justified.
Okay, wait, hold on. So there's a useful distinction here.
Let me finish, or I'm banning you from my server. You always have infinite justifications for every actor to do whatever the fuck they want, but Israel has to be the crazy adult in the entirety of every single situation. This is unworkable. Right. No sane country, no sane human being would operate under this rule set anywhere on the fucking planet. Nobody would do it.
So why do you think that we should take some illiberal means?
This is retarded. What a retarded fucking question. Do you think it's illiberal if somebody's breaking into my house and I kick him in the face and I didn't vote for it? I didn't have a Democratic panel. What are we talking about? What do you mean illiberal?
Aren't a lot of the debates recently, of what happens after Trump, we have to go outside of the bounds and norms that we would normally adhere to kind of restore
conversations about my United States government usually revolve around concepts related to liberalism. Correct. When I'm talking about
what is liberalism about, right? Liberalism is about power hierarchy and the architecture of a system. That is what liberalism is entirely about. Right. And so if, for example, the higher order power in a power hierarchy violates a tremendous amount of the principles they are supposedly adhering to, then you would not be surprised. And you're right. There's this weird word I use. I don't know if I said justified or you said justified, but there is language that maybe I should be more careful about that upsets you around. OK, are we excusing something? Do we understand it?
Why are you saying that? Oh, my God. How do you watch my stream? You're using your characterization of my takes. My position is that you're using language that upsets me.
That was just a throwaway comment. Don't take it so harsh. So, but then we take it to the United States and you say it doesn't apply the same way. I'm not sure why it wouldn't apply the same way, right?
Because criticisms that I make of my own domestic government are going to be different than multiple governments that are interacting with each other on the global stage.
Of course, but the reason you make those criticisms, the reason you talk about changing the behavior around a set of norms is because the norms and the power hierarchy have been violated in a way where you say, look, this thing that we otherwise adhered to in the past no longer seems to be applying right now. And by the way, you're also doing this, geopolitically as it relates to Trump. You're not just doing it domestically as it relates to Trump, right? We're saying that people are reacting to essentially what is a violation, and we don't know what to expect next, right? That's one of the other problems. We don't know what to expect next if we do not somehow adhere back and put back together the order that previously allowed people to act as you would want them to.
Okay. Walk me from whatever you just said, that smorgasbord of stuff, walk me from that to it's actually okay to shut down all of your neighboring shipping lanes if you have been illegally aggressive.
That's fair.
On
I don't
nation.
Think it's okay, and I don't remember how I asked that question. I don't think it would be
Wait,
okay.
If you
I
don't think it's
it
okay, then what would be wrong with Zelensky appealing to the United Nations to solve that problem when that is exactly the job of the United Nations?
At this time, violating the sovereignty for no clear reason because Netanyahu forced it or forced Trump to, and threatening to do all sorts of other things to them. Yeah, in that situation, you essentially have someone you've backed into a wall, and I think Zelensky should be kind of understanding of being backed into a wall, and his message here does not seem to acknowledge how this same tweet could be said about him.
But it can't be said about him. What is Ukraine shut down internationally?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if we would find analogies, would you?
Actually, there's one really good one. I'm glad you didn't bring it up, so let's just keep moving on.
Could you bring it up?
No, because I don't like giving you guys stronger arguments for
Stop
anything.
Stop saying you guys, I'm just me.
No,
just
you're kidding. No, you are you guys, for sure.
Okay, but what
you
is
You should
it?
Have said the Nord Stream 2.
Oh, damn, you're right.
However, but the difference is, you can see, it really is a great analogy. It almost works for you, but if I mind torture it a bit, it works for me. The Nord Stream 2 is a great example because, one, there's a reason why Ukraine didn't openly take credit for that. Two, now I don't know how true this is, but I think the current argument or position is that Zelensky wasn't even aware of the Nord Stream 2 being shut down, okay, number two. But number three, the world was critical when that was shut down. And number four, nobody has made any statements whatsoever that were saying that Ukraine is justified in destroying that pipeline. Like your dick sucking Iran right now, that is a state sponsor of terrorism all across the fucking region, that is actively shipping things. Like the situation is so unbelievable.
Could you go back to my tweet? Could you press the back button real quick?
Okay. What?
I don't think I said here that we should abandon Ukraine or Zelensky whatsoever. I'm a huge fan of his, and I have absolutely no idea why you would assume that I would.
Because you're saying
this means
fuck this tweet for real, bro.
Yes.
You're saying this because you saw it probably from Medi. Yeah, but I don't know what is so objectionable or condemnable about the particular tweet.
Hello, hello.
Hi.
Can I ask a serious question? I'm trying to be not mad right now, but Iran sponsored Russia in the war against us. They're also quite literally the reason why we have been attacked by 50,000 Shahed drones, which daily bomb our cities. Daily, every day, my city is terrorized by those Shaheds. So please tell me, on fucking God-given earth, how do you even assume that we should say anything that will be against the destruction of that regime? I'm serious right now.
I'll tell you.
Who's this? Iran. Is that legal? Is that fine?
Do you think that Iran should be nuked?
No. Neither does Zelensky.
Exactly. My opinions exist on a spectrum, right? And so I'm not suggesting at all that Iran is right in what they do against Ukraine. I'm so completely supportive of Ukraine, and I think we should be spending so much more money than we are and sending so much more support.
It's not what I'm talking about. Why is it wrong for us to not to appeal to United Nations and also support the destruction of this regime?
I think maybe it's the language, and this is why I said fuck this tweet, right? It's the language that presumes that an actor that is currently being pressured in a way that is, by the way, just like Ukraine.
Pressure them.
Look, I get what you mean there as someone who cares about the Ukrainian conflict. And by the way, I probably care more about, you know, kind of the Ukrainian conflict than I do. Huh?
Are they the biggest sponsor of terrorism in the world?
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means, why it relates to the tweet. Why does that relate to the tweet?
Everything. Their regime is doing a shit ton of.
Does that mean we should nuke them? Does that mean we should? Nuke them?
They didn't get nuked. Nobody's talking about nuking them.
Right, but this is all just on a spectrum, right? So just because they're a state sponsor of terrorism, or just because Hamas exists in Gaza, does not excuse every action you take against the sovereignty of a nation. If we excused every action you take against the sovereignty of a nation because they violate some principle of some other nation or some other nations,
nobody
would have a problem.
Nobody is saying that it would excuse every action
against
but
Iran.
The question
did
is,
he say that because they sponsored fucking Russia and we are daily bombed by them and they sponsor every fucking dog shit terrorist organization in the world. Did he say that we should nuke them?
I think it would be useful to think about it this way. The people who have sympathies of a kind for the sovereignty of Iran and the sovereignty of a nation don't necessarily have to agree on what Iran should look like or Ukraine looks like post these wars. But they can agree that right now, these are two nations whose sovereignties are being violated in a way that bothers our higher order sensibilities.
It's offensive. It's offensive. What did we do that our sovereignty was infringed upon? What the fuck they do? It's a big difference, my guy. Is it not?
I didn't say it was the same thing at all. I think you're getting properly excited about the fact that this is about Zelensky's tweet, but this is one of I don't know how many tweets I made. I think he shouldn't have tweeted this. That doesn't mean I think we should remove support from Ukraine. That doesn't mean I think we should change anything. I think we should go further. This tweet still was still not an acknowledgement.
Tweet. I never accused you that you said because of this tweet we need to remove
right, but
support.
You keep asking me what, as if I'm not making a difference or distinction between them. I think they're very different and distinct.
Apparently not, because you're saying
no evidence of that. There's no evidence of that, right? You said you are talking about my tweet. My tweet is a tweet about how I don't like the language in his tweet. That does not mean that I'm equating Iran and Ukraine.
In terms of sovereignty infringement, they're not.
That's why I think the tweet is flawed. That's not why I'm equating the two geopolitical situations. That's why I think the tweet is flawed.
You lost me on that one, buddy.
Fair enough.
I don't understand. Like, I'm bringing up what you said about this. You said the tweet is flawed because you say that in both cases this is about infringement of a sovereignty of the country, and Zelensky apparently is allegedly a saint in your eyes who needs to think that any infringement upon sovereignty, even of our dreadful enemy, is an incredibly comparable situation, and he should be on the side of Iran in that question.
I think it would be naive to ignore the fact that a lot of both of these situations are bad in ways that you and I would probably agree on because of Donald Trump. And the decisions that he's making geopolitically, right? And so when you say what you just said to me, I think you are ignoring what I'm reacting to as someone domestically, which is that Trump is making a universe of bad decisions when it comes to sovereignty. By the way, bringing Zelensky to the White House or wherever whenever he talks about Zelensky in a way that violates Ukraine's sovereignty. And I think it'd be good for Zelensky to be cognizant that sovereignty arguments are good for him right now and good for all of us right now. And so when you talk about what we're kind of seeing in this tweet, it's a recognition, right, that essentially what Zelensky wants to make right now is a sovereignty argument, and Trump and Netanyahu to some extent and Putin to some extent, but that trifecta, relying on Trump, relying on domestic enablement of Trump in the United States, is violating sovereignties in other places of the world.
I listened to all of that, and I still don't see, to be honest with you, how it connects with
do you agree that he is violating sovereignties in a way that is novel? Trump.
I wouldn't say that he violated. I don't know why you said that he violated Ukrainian sovereignty.
He is not reacting appropriately to the violation of Ukrainian sovereignty. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, sure. That's true. Yeah, but cool. You said that they, you know, are a little bit different. But anyway, I don't like how he treats that, obviously. Right. That's pretty clear, I think, to everyone. But it's just not the question that I just don't see the connection between those two things.
So then, even if you then think whatever you think about the Iranian regime, which I probably mostly agree with you when they're not being actively threatened to be nuked, would you also agree that the way Netanyahu is treating the situation, even if you like support the potential outcome, right? We have to think about process different outcome here. Would you agree that the process by which Netanyahu is undertaking the attacks on Iranian sovereignty are taking advantage of the same Trumpian impulses in this moment about sovereignty?
If Iranian regime fell,
Outcomes. Hold on, we can't go to outcomes. We have to talk about process.
Process, dude. It's just what Destiny said. It's I didn't want to be that rude, okay? But she said, why is Ukraine and Israel need to be the adults? Need to be the ones at adhering.
Answer the question first. But do you agree that Trump is taking a similar approach to sovereignty when it comes to how he is enabling or even attacking on behalf of Netanyahu Iranian sovereignty? Do you think that's taking advantage of the same impulses that Trump has as it relates to sovereignty?
The same impulses? You mean like the same with what? With like Putin or like Netanyahu?
That he does not believe in national sovereignty. It's a power, you know, might makes right. Unilateral decision making by either him or his allies on what nation states should look like.
I don't know, I guess considering like their, they didn't really do the fucking ground invasion occupation thing, so it's not
right,
like
again. I just want to reclarify the question. Do you agree that it's taking advantage of the same impulses?
In some way, I guess, yeah.
That's all I'm really suggesting. And because of that, especially as it relates to, you know, me being in the United States, one of the things that I think Zelensky could be more cognizant of and would support kind of the national argument happening against Trump here, right? The argument here actually melds Ukraine and Iran very closely. Most mainstream people have sympathies for both. And
just
the reason
clear,
they do is because...
Just a quick clarification. That's not true. The majority of people that have sympathies for Iran don't give a fuck about Ukraine, but...
I don't know if I agree.
That's fucking wild. The fucker who defends Iran right now and screeches about the sovereignty and how evil the war is the exact same motherfucker that is mildly pro-Russian and doesn't give a fuck about Ukraine.
No, that's wrong. And you guys are going to not agree with me, but that's okay. You're both brain broken. So, not true. It's just not true. Hold on. Yeah. Are we assuming every pro-Iranian person is just like Islamist?
That's what I said. I said that actually 100% of them are. That's what I said. Good summary. Good summary.
So I can't take your positions to an extreme.
I assume it means they understand it really well. Yes.
Let me discard this because whatever. Okay. So then the point I was making was domestically, the argument we should want to make, one of the things that will allow us not only, by the way, to fight Trump, but post-Trump forces around geopolitics and coming back to the notion of a world order and coming back to the notion of UN, is that sovereignty is to be respected. That if we do want to cause the downfall of the Iranian regime, we should spend the money, we should do coalition building, we should get the support of our citizenry in whatever country that would go and undertake that mission. Both missions have the same domestic flaw. The United States is unilaterally, or Trump is unilaterally, in conjunction with his, as a person, allies, deciding to break sovereignties elsewhere. And I think it's good for everybody, including Zelensky, including whoever else, to know that domestically, we actually should be protecting the notion of sovereignty. It doesn't mean that we can't go invade another nation or take down a regime. It means, though, that there's process to it, right? We do want to go coalition built. We do want to take the UN seriously and the Security Council seriously. We do want to take the proper process to get to the outcome. Because if we only go based on outcomes, we're all screwed, right? This is a world none of us want to live in.
He appeals to the UN. He doesn't appeal to fucking Trump. He appeals to the UN. That's how it should work. He's criticizing the inability.
I'm not disagreeing with you there. I don't disagree with you, but do you agree with what I just said, though, about the domestic politics of Trump and the fact that sovereignty is something that the United States is violating because Trump does not respect the concept of sovereignty? Do you agree or disagree?
every fucking concept of sovereignty needs to be respected. There were countries that were attacked for a reason, okay? There were countries.
Yeah, no, hold on. That's different than respecting sovereignty, though. Hold on. We can attack a country while respecting their sovereignty because we believe they violated or are violating something that is existential either to us or our allies. But we would, because we respect sovereignty.
Fucking regime change and killing the people is, like, by definition, not respecting the sovereignty. I don't know what you mean. Killing the leaders of the country is, like, by definition, not supporting, not being respectful of the sovereignty.
Would you agree that there's a difference between Trump unilaterally alongside an ally deciding to do that and disrespect sovereignty versus...
I'm bored of that. I agree with you.
You're not bored of it. I don't think you're bored of it. I think you're mad at me, but you agree with me. We generally want the ability to appeal to world bodies and to get our citizenry on board before we take action that is extreme. That is a complete...
Nobody disagrees with that. Steven doesn't disagree with the fact that Trump shouldn't unilaterally do those actions. Nobody's saying that. Who you boxing?
I don't know why then we don't understand the notion that we want to defend sovereignty, right, as a principle and as a practice, including in tweets.
Okay, listen. I tried. Okay. Yeah, I tried. I'm going to go. Yeah. Thank you very much. Bye bye.
Be careful.
Thank you, Anna.
Okay.
Oh, shit. I was going to ask her what hair dye to use.
Way to go. Okay. I'm sorry. Recentering.
Yeah.
So, what exactly is your issue with Zelensky's tweet?
I think I, again, was reacting to the idea that no one should be allowed to block such globally significant. Yeah.
Do you think that people should be allowed to block globally significant trade if they're being aggressed on in an illegal manner?
Allowed. I don't mean this in a cute way. What does allowed mean?
As in, if there was a body that we could appeal to, like the United Nations, to stop it, ought we appeal to that body, or should we not say anything and just say that, well, this country should...
We ought to appeal to that body.
Okay.
However, I think Zelensky's in a unique position as being somebody else who is trying to get process to be the thing that wins, to understand that currently what's going on with Iran does not respect process, and so they're resorting to out-of-process means.
And again,
I'm not saying the word allowed, right?
So they're allowed to victimize the rest of the world then, if there's an out of process attack against them, and everybody else in the world has no right to say anything at all.
I mean, help me think. I'm thinking about this out loud. What am I looking for? Do you think I'm just stupid? There's something here that, like, I can't identify. There's some difference in allowed and
like, we can't complain about it. Otherwise, we're endorsing illegal action.
Well, again, I don't dislike Zelensky. I think the tweet was poorly timed. I guess the tweet is poorly timed to me, even in light of what you're saying. I agree with what you're saying.
No time for that. When would be a better time for that tweet? When it's all done and over?
Because April 7th. That would have been when he was threatening to nuke Iran. No.
End the civilization or whatever. But
yeah. That's a uniquely... Look, I'll say this. If you're threatened to be nuked, you should be allowed to block the strait. Probably. I don't fully endorse that statement, but I think that's probably true.
Okay.
Agree?
I would disagree. I think in your worldview, I think the United States should forcibly seize every single port on the planet then, in case any two countries are... Because if any two countries are being aggressed on each other, I wouldn't want retards like you giving an excuse to them or carte blanche to them to destroy the world economy, because they're the victims. We all have to be the victims now of these things. Yeah, I would.
Okay,
I would just say every
give
single.
Give me a charitable version of my argument. Because that doesn't obviously sound right.
The most charitable construction of your argument. I'm trying to think if I want to do the work for you on this, because so many things you've said are so fucking retarded. There's a charitable construction of your argument, but it's impossible. The charitable construction of your argument is that Zelensky should be appealing to the United Nations exclusively to bring down the aggression of the United States and Israel against Iran, because Zelensky himself is a victim of unjustified Russian aggression. And the principles that would cause the United Nations to restrict U.S. and Israeli action could theoretically be the same principles that would restrict the United Nations from aggressive Russian action.
Ooh, I love that. What do we think about that?
There are like 50 million retarded problems with it. The first is that the UN never restricts bad actors in the Middle East, apparently. They don't do fuck all about anything. So that's the first stupid thing. The second stupid thing is that...
That's more like just a historical critique. That's not really it's still a capability, right?
Okay. The second thing is that we generally don't give anybody a pass to commit like worldwide economic damage just because they're being aggressed or attacked on by anybody ever. And I think a lot of people would see that as like a severe aggression against literally the entire planet. I think that Ukraine has been appealing to the UN forever for Russia. UN doesn't do fuck all about Russia. And they're never going to. I think that the reason why Iran got attacked and the reason why Ukraine got attacked are two totally separate reasons. I think you could easily justify an attack against Iran. I don't think Russia ever had a justification for an attack on Ukraine.
Of course.
So I think the situations are just so dramatically not comparable that it would just be very sus for why a person would come out and make that argument in response to Zelensky's tweet. That would be very, very, very curious.
Let's go to that day, right? I guess what does the whole, you know, the unpopular president of the United States, you know, unilaterally threatening without support of his polity and of his Congress to
He's tweeting that, but Zelensky has never stated anything in favor of it. And this is like Iran was already blocking the Strait of Hormuz before this. So I mean, like,
I have a slight preference though that on that day he kind of understands the uniqueness of that situation, and he doesn't tweet it that day.
So if he tweeted it the day prior or the next day, you would be okay with it?
Honestly, yeah, because the Strait of Hormuz, by the way, I do think that, you know, there's a lot of ways in which Trump and Netanyahu are making it hard, but I don't think it's a good thing that Iran is doing that. And so, yeah, 100%.
I don't believe you, but there's no way I can prove that. So,
I mean, so let's go to, you know, the idea you don't believe me. I think this is one of the flaws, you know, in general that I'm trying to point to.
You can say that, but like along every single step of the way, you have only reinforced the view that I've had that every single like presumption or feeling I have about people on your camp, that they were all my correction or all my assumptions are correct.
What camp am I part of?
I don't know. Whatever the fuck this camp is, it all feels the same.
Can you acknowledge that there might be a flaw in kind of your grouping?
Yeah, when there are flaws demonstrated, for sure. But again, like every single thing you've said and done seemed to point that my
what have I said
assumptions
and done?
Were correct. Well, you misunderstood criticism I've had about it. Hassan. You seem to be using these asymmetry arguments. That
one. Can we discard it? Because I think it's complicated. Because
we can ditch that if you want. Yeah. You seem to be a big believer in this asymmetry argument that appears to give a free pass to every smaller actor.
Do you not believe in some version of the asymmetry argument?
It's not the same argument. No.
In the United States.
I'm just going to say no for the purposes of your comparison because it's such a bad comparison that just because two parties are asymmetrical, or rather I'll say yes, but just because two parties are asymmetrical doesn't mean that every single standard is changed, correct?
100% agree with that.
Then I don't know how, so asymmetry has nothing to do changed, with here. Right? What?
A lot. So let's go to...
How does the asymmetry apply here? Is one side allowed to terrorism?
What's here?
Here as in an asymmetry that would allow Iran to close the Strait of Hormuz. Or
I didn't apply the asymmetry. I did not apply the asymmetry argument to this. I did not apply the
asymmetry argument
to this,
that would excuse Hamas terrorist attacking Israeli civilians.
Did I justify
what are you applying the asymmetry argument to?
The asymmetry argument was about you not critiquing what is essentially a version of, you know, kind of Hassan's Russia, where basically every stream you do a lot of apologetics for the government, where I'm suggesting actually we can look at the asymmetry and know that a lot of the things that come downstream of that asymmetry, for example the revelry and cruelty, are things that we should be actively critiquing and punishing and sanctioning individual members of the Israeli government is another thing I mentioned. But every time I brought up any of those things, you're like, oh, well, why would we do that? We're telling the IDF, you're not doing aid appropriately. We're going to come and do it for you.
Yes, wait.
Those are places where the asymmetry would say, hey, we have an obligation to try to solve this,
right? Filibustering, okay? I agree with that, but then what was my response to that? My response to that was I would agree with that, but I would give a different position that literally nobody would agree with, which is if we're going to sanction the IDF for doing these things, then we should sanction Hamas as well. And then that's when you brought up the asymmetry thing and said, well, no, I don't think so, because it's not the same.
I don't mind. Hold on. We didn't get that far into that. So let's
you're,
do that.
Okay.
You can sanction Hamas.
You're either having memory problems.
You can sanction Hamas.
No. If you don't remember saying that, then I don't know why we're having this conversation. I don't know if you've like literally forgotten.
No, I said we didn't go far. I said we didn't go farther than that. We didn't continue that.
Do we need to look at the VOD? No, you said that that would be unfair. You wouldn't be. You'd okay, be opposed
I,
to
I
that.
Give up. I said whatever you said. I said. But let's go to it.
Wait, you said Hamas. No, you said I'm a retard and Dusty's right about everything. So then we agree. If everything.
But then we should. Do we think separate Hamas, and this is why we got to the aid argument, Hamas from the people in Gaza?
I don't know.
How do we appropriately sanction, right? And this was where the argument actually went, Stephen. This is where the argument actually went.
You realize you have nothing to say. Okay.
No, come on. This is where the argument actually went. So how could we sanction? Because I agree with sanctioning
Hamas,
right?
I'm not
going
to let you do this. You're not. You can't just bring up a thing and
I'm not trying to do anything.
Then you need to elaborate on what you just said. You said separate Hamas from the people of the Gaza Strip. How? What do you mean by
separate? Which is when we sanction... military action.
I don't know what you're not saying anything of substance. I don't know what you're saying.
The aid example is one example. We would use our forces if Israel is unable to do this to say, hey, here are places of aid where we're going to communicate to Hamas that, hey, we're not going to send you resources, but we are going to provide aid to civilians directly.
How do you do that? People have tried that. Hamas will hijack the aid. You have no way of knowing who's Hamas or who's not. Or like this is what the IDF and Kogat and everybody already tried to do.
Those versions of aid go back where we have good arguments to what you're talking about, and it might be continuing to happen. But the versions of argument where Hamas are essentially like resource arbitraging are about shipments that go into kind of deep Hamas or, you know, kind of Gaza territory. Right now, when we're talking about aid sites, this is not a real critique.
Okay.
The critique of aid sites right now is that the IDF can't actually execute them without shooting civilians.
I'm not even sure what we're talking about, but okay.
Do you disagree that there's a difference between what we used to do, which is that when either Israel or, you know, global entities would send resources into Gaza and Hamas, you know, is part of that arrangement or decides to hijack that arrangement and not deliver those resources to individual civilians, is different than right now where we have aid sites where the primary difficulty is travel to those aid sites, access, times the IDF, you know, kind of turning them into potentially risky zones for those civilians to access.
I'm too retarded to follow. I don't know what you're saying. I have no idea what you're.
I think there's a difference in before where Hamas, yes, was arbitraging that stuff and taking it and not providing to citizens versus now, which is we could do it, but these aid sites are IDF poisoned.
Okay.
Do you not think that's different?
I'm too retarded. I don't. You're saying we could do it, but Hamas arbitraged it, and now the aid sites are IDF poison. Are you assuming that, like, if the U.S. set up other aid sites, they would be more trusted or something? Is that what you're saying?
I'm both saying that, but I'm also saying that the critique you're making is of an old version of aid, not in a time of war, and not with aid sites. This was us sending resources in more traditional trade where trucks go.
Wait, hold on. Are you talking about aid that we'd be providing not during war then? Because I thought you said you wanted to focus on during the war.
No, now I'm talking about during the war. But now I'm talking about now. I'm talking about right now.
Are they considered still at war with the Gaza Strip right now? Or
I don't really know. We use those words weirdly.
I think there's a ceasefire right now.
Okay.
I think we could execute on an aid situation in a way that would allow us to differentiate sanctioning Hamas, which, by the way, if we believe Israel at all, has been broadly or tremendously diminished, versus sanction effects happening to individual civilians.
Yeah, we do.
And then I would agree with you. And we should do exactly what you said, which is we should sanction both. But I think it's important for the second one to happen because the distinction between the two and the power asymmetry is that Israel, as a rich, powerful nation that also controls the resources of the second, can feed and maintain the support and health of their populace during those sanctions at cost to themselves, whereas, you know, Hamas largely can't, whether or not it's their fault. We then want to say, okay, the civilians are a victim of both Israel and Hamas, therefore we need to have a special version of how we execute those sanctions for one side versus the other, because one of them is highly capable. There's an asymmetry. By the way, I don't mean that the version of the part of the sanction that's on Hamas can be aggressive.
You need to break down what you just said. Tell me, explain it to me.
We aggressively sanctioned both Israel and Hamas, but in the Hamas
I need to move to break it down. Tell me what he just said, because I'm retarded. I can't. Tell me. Explain it to me. Oh, he fucking left. Fucking cut.
Wait, what happened?
Nothing.
What'd you ask me? I didn't hear you.
To explain my argument.
We can sanction the IDF, or I'm sorry, we can sanction Israel and we can sanction Israeli citizens because they have more resources, but we can't sanction...
I didn't say we can't.
Hamas citizens? What's the difference?
Jesus.
The problem is your positions are so tortured because of how fucking incoherent they are that you're doing every single thing you can to create out of whole cloth a completely different set of standards for another people than you
they
want.
They are a completely
ones.
Reasonable different set of standards.
No, they're not. They're not in this case. They're not. Yes. They're not. There are some lines that you probably should just never cross. Like, people should never be just like doing massive terrorist attacks against civilians for the purposes of terrorizing a population. It's probably the line
agreed.
That it doesn't really matter. So, and when people are engaged in behavior that resembles that, you should probably sanction them or punish them in some way. And yeah. but you're trying to make an excuse for why the people in the Gaza Strip are somehow materially different than the people in
the excuse for why the immense powers with immense intelligence that manages to do strike forces into certain apartments, pagers in other sides, and the United States has the CIA and all this other stuff, and the IDF has XYZ and the Mossad has XYZ, and you're making excuses for why they can't execute a more nuanced campaign of either sanctions or military.
Well,
but you can't justify why other than the fact that they haven't before. The only reason
a whole different argument now. I don't even. We're talking about a whole different thing now.
No, it isn't, because I said we should differentiate sanctions against Hamas versus how we provide aid to their people at the same time. If we're to sanction them both at the UN, then it should be with a nuance that we make sure that aid is a tremendous part of how we make sure that Hamas being sanctioned aggressively doesn't continue to be a huge detriment to their citizenry, to the citizenry in Gaza.
But I don't think that that's possible, given that Hamas is the government of the Gaza Strip. I don't know if you could ever completely and totally separate these
and that's
two
where
things.
I go. I don't think that's reasonable. Why is it not possible? Things are all sorts of things are possible, right? The
How
United States and Israel both accomplish
just,
amazing things.
You're just filibustering.
Use military boots on the ground.
Why do you filibuster when you know that you're just?
I'm not filibustering.
No, hold on.
I'm not filibustering.
No,
you're just.
No. Please, I just want to mind your brain for 1 second. I'm so curious why people do this. No. You said, well, we both know that the IDF and the U.S. military can do amazing things. Why did you say that sentence? Like, I don't believe that. And I don't know that. Why did you say that sentence?
Because you're saying there's an incapability of them
Correct.
To do something.
Yes.
And I'm saying there's a capability.
Do you think that the incapability of them to do something has to do with the lack of the U.S. and the IDF being amazing militaries? It has nothing to do with
I don't think there's an incapability. That's the difference between you and me. I don't think there's an incapability. I think there's an excuse making. This goes to my whole framework of the world.
Wait, then just say that there's an incapability, and I'll explain why I think it's incapable. I don't think you can selectively punish one party inside of a place where there is a government where your goal is to target the government, because they can just steal from their citizens. You can't selectively target the government there.
The government of Hamas has never been and continues not to be as organized as, for example, the United States government. If we used boots on the ground as an example, and we used intelligence to make sure that our people were as safe as possible, but also we maybe shot some bolts on the other side, we could,
more antagonistic. So you want a full military occupation then, and a full government takeover.
I didn't say full.
What are you talking about then? You're not saying anything.
Partial. Let's use partial.
You want to okay? How do you guarantee then that when you get to the Gaza Strip and you start handing out supplies, that when the citizens go back to their homes, that Hamas doesn't just redistribute the food from them to Hamas or take the things that they just got?
I think that you and I, or the U.S. military, or even the IDF, could come up with some really great ways. Oh, I'm not a military expert, neither are you.
Okay. All right.
Come on, really? You can't figure out an imaginative way to say, okay, we're going to provide certain types of aid. We're not going to provide certain things that can be turned into weapons, but we will provide a lot of food aid. We'll provide a lot of housing aid so that these people can, you know, kind of rebuild a little bit of their day-to-day lives without providing resources that we would both agree would are high likelihood to be repurposed and high likelihood to be repurposed into dangerous materials. Or materials that could be used dangerously. That'd be the first framework we could use. The second framework we could use is, can we use these aid sites in a way that would make them safe for civilians to come to, even if, by the way, we talk about them being safe to come to, we're also talking about more of them, so that access and large commutes to these aid sites don't have to put people's lives at risk and health at risk and put them under tremendous amount of pressure, so we do more aid sites that are now reliable. These are two things that we could do, and the only reason we don't do them is because the IDF right now is in charge of this and doesn't want that to happen because they're trying to suppress the population. But if we did do them, and by the way, and if we did do them and didn't work, we could change what we did the next day. This is one of the core flaws of your argument, is like, as time has passed for years, we've seen the IDF, which is obviously part of the completely unprincipled Israeli government, execute bad versions of all these solutions that they want to do, where they're the aggressor in a lot of these cases. And what we say is bad, we would agree, are bad outcomes. And I'm going, let's just try this other thing. It's the same thing, you know, that we should say about a lot of our polity and a lot of our politics. Let's try, I'm not for free buses, but if Mamdani, and I'm in New York City, if he wants to try free buses, let him try free buses. I don't believe free buses are going to work. Again, I'm a neoliberal, I'm a capitalist. But like, if he wants to try it, he said, while he was campaigning, that if it doesn't work, we won't do it. Like, I just want to run a campaign. I just want to run 3 test bodegas run by the city. I don't think those are going to work. I think we also have seen evidence they don't work before. But if he wants to spend a little bit of money to try, and we need to pivot strategies afterwards, that's fine. The point is to try something. Right, and so far, we've only blank check endorsed sets of strategies executed by the same bad actors to see bad outcomes, and you're going, well, your thing seems, you know, kind of like it might not work. Sure, I acknowledge that.
Okay. That was a.
Do you agree?
That was a great. No. They have tried things. There's a reason why that whole population hasn't starved, despite the fact that you guys have said they've been starving for 2 years. Like, clearly, somehow food is getting in there, right? There isn't mass starvation. The people aren't all dying.
Some amount of food.
Enough to feed 2 million people for 2 years, right?
You wouldn't want to live there.
So, what was the point of saying that? What argument do you
think
you were making there?
I don't think.
Hold on, wait. What? Do you think that I think that I would want to live there? Do you think my audience thinks that I said I would want to live there?
I think
that speak to the argument that they're not
you're
starving?
Stretching...
Wait, do you think that if I would live there? Do you think if I was living there, do you think I'd be starving to death?
No.
Okay, so I don't know what the fuck the point of this. So it was another filibuster, okay? So it seems like a lot
I use the word starving, and you like to stretch my words where I'm not trying to stretch yours. I use the word starving to maybe mean something slightly different than you that I think is still very important. If you want me to use different language here to...
I'm just saying, it seems to be the case that if 2 million people are in there and they're not starving to death, that a lot of food...
Do you think they're food insecure?
Sure. But they're not... A lot of
I want them to be food secure.
Great, me too, okay? And I also want them to have internet and broadband and 1 gigabit internet connections to everything, and I want maximum ad revenue if they see
What if we just started at food secure?
That's fine.
What if we just
However,
started at food
all
secure?
I'm saying
what
is that, start with all some I'm changes? Is that, all I'm saying is that clearly there's been a lot of food that's gotten in there. If there's 2 million people and they've managed to survive this long, that's all I'm saying.
What if we just said... Okay, what if we just said it wasn't enough?
Do you agree with that, or that is that true? That a lot of food seems to have gotten in there? Enough to feed 2 million people for them to not die over the last 2 years?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so they're doing something. So when you're like, oh, we just try something and it doesn't work, we throw our hands up and do nothing. Something is happening, right?
Okay.
If you want to suggest other ways to distribute food or whatever, that's fine. But the solutions that you are suggesting, I don't think you realize how dramatic you're talking about when you're talking about a foreign military occupying sections of this country and then having a security force in there to run local operations to try to ensure that the distribution of aid. It's never worked this way anywhere in the world. What you're talking about has never worked anywhere in the world. It didn't work in Yemen. It hasn't really worked in Syria. It's kind of, I guess, working in the Gaza Strip.
What are some things that you think we could do in, let's call it, the next 2 to 6 weeks to make it operationally reasonable that would be some middle ground? So I'm not suggesting, by the way, that everything that I'm suggesting...
I don't even know 100% what the situation is at the moment that needs like dire addressing. I'm not sure 100%.
Yeah.
I have what I would assume would be that they need to have elections again so that they have a legitimate representative for the Palestinian people. The elections need to include the Gaza Strip and the West Bank. And then you need to bring that representative and Netanyahu or whoever the current Israeli leader is back to fucking D.C. or
one of the challenges I assume... And again, this both of us are a little bit not up to date, but it's not just like could we get Hamas to let them run elections? Could they run elections? It's like also, do we understand that how they would get information about who to elect? Like, what is the? And I don't mean this again in a cute way. Like, the utility of elections feels difficult to me because there's no politics there, right? In the way we would want. It's essentially a terrorist organization, to your point.
The Palestinian people in Gaza are people connected to the world and the internet and they have politics.
Okay, take me charitably for a second here, right? Like, is the utility of that version of election where, yes, they might find some amount of information going to get us a lot? Like, what do you think the difference?
What you're looking
is
for,
it the representative to you
for,
that is?
What you're looking for is legitimacy. You need a person who can represent the Palestinian people. And if they can demonstrate that representation through an election, then that makes them a worthy representative, ideally.
Okay.
But if you just take like you couldn't just take a random person from any part in Palestine, because then there are going to be some people like, oh, this guy doesn't represent me. He's not my leader.
Which
I don't
trust this guy. Often use Hamas, you know, kind of as much as we hate to, right? But both Israel and the United States use Hamas as a proxy.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, but they're that is.
Look, I'm acknowledging your point. We need representatives, and even right now, we use the enemy as a representative.
Well, because they're the government of the Gaza Strip. But I'm just saying that there needs to be a unified representative of all of the Palestinian people to negotiate some deal with. But again, the solution that I'm giving right there, neither side wants that. So you would need a president that has a vision for peace in Israel that is relatively.
I don't think anyone's even suggested that, though. I don't know.
Neither side wants a two-state solution. The Israelis, generally speaking, want all the Palestinians gone. Palestinians, generally speaking, want a one state where they are the majority population.
So wait, hold on. I guess you just went long term. I thought of this election as being kind of like for effect and purpose for, let's say, the midterm. Let's move away from that. If you're now talking about, hey, we're talking about two state solutions for a second. Let's move back to today, and we go, we want to affect a set of changes that, even if they are not long term, begin to allow both Israel to feel a little safer or whatever, or to feel as safe as they do now, because they're pretty safe at least from Gaza, and then allow the people inside Gaza to begin to kind of have some version of self-determination / stopping, you know, kind of the acquiescence to terrorism. What are initial steps? I think this is something, and by the way, the reason I'm asking this question is I think it is actually important that people who are in this middle ground that you probably identify as, that I would say identify as, of like, hey, we don't agree, you know, with the complete crazies on the pro-Palestine side. We think Israel wants way too much at this point too. But we need to affect versions of change over the next 1 to 6 months that begin to allow conversation to happen.
The
right?
Most
to your
important
point,
thing that could happen would be a commitment from, ideally from leaders on the ground, but a foreign leader to say that this will get solved. All of the Palestinian terrorist attacks and antagonism towards the Israeli population, everything over the past 3 or 4 decades, all of it has stemmed from a feeling of hopelessness that there will never be a solution to their issues with the Israelis. That's the issue. So having somebody who come out with a strong commitment that seems to be committed to figuring out, you know, what a resolution looks like would be the first step that would ideally start to move people in a positive direction. Probably, because that's how it has historically gone, but Trump is too
Hard to do it. I don't think that's a bad thing.
Yeah, but I mean, the voices in the United States right now internationally that are on both sides of this are don't want this.
But no one makes a good version of this argument, I would say, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Even if I acknowledge your point.
Like when we hear people say something like foreign nations should, you know, kind of begin by taking some responsibility, which would also lead to some sense of self for these people.
The majority of people that are on the pro-Pali side right now want a one state where Jews are expelled from
Israel. I'm not talking about those people.
Okay, the majority of the crazy Zionists.
Your argument.
That's fine.
Of your argument.
It doesn't matter. It wouldn't convince them. The crazy Zionists want the Palestinian subjugation.
Stephen, I don't think everyone is on these two extremes. That's one of my points here.
They are. Find me someone who's not then. Find me any main figure that would be willing to have a conversation, or show me their conversations about this that look nuanced.
Main figure.
Right now. Any large
media figure. I'd say most mainstream Democrats probably.
They're very
almost unopinionated, other than like kind of let's call it ephemeral whims.
I'm talking about people with a strong opinion on it, not people who are.
Hold on, but we can create strong opinions, right? We can create an alternative.
No, because
strong opinions.
No, because I don't think anybody with a strong opinion on this would ever. There are very few people that would occupy the position that I have. Most
those people are losing mindshare. So rapidly, it's unbelievable.
No, I'm pretty sure they're gaining mindshare because the crazy anti-Semitic, anti-Zionist, anti-Israel sentiment is probably growing.
I think it's a barbell that's leaving a useful middle.
Nobody. Okay. All right. Can you?
Can we still do anything else?
I'm just curious. Yeah. No, this is why I said we should give them a nuke, so they'll blow themselves up. Can you name a single like large media figure? When I say large, it could be fucking alternative media, or like a large political leader. Just like a random representative from Idaho or whatever, that you feel has a good position on how to move Israel-Palestine into a positive direction.
Wait, hold on. I think I just told you that I don't think so, but I think that people exist, right? So they don't currently hold that position, but I think they don't hold either extreme position.
Okay,
either.
So you think,
for example,
most
mainstream
Democrats.
There's
a whole bunch of people that are just waiting to hear this position, but nobody besides me has identified that, or nobody else has figured out that all these people exist. There's this whole group of people that
funnily
are
funnily enough,
from-
yes, for this reason. Now that this has gained so much of our our national conversation and international conversation, I think they are being pressured by their populace to either take one of the barbell positions. Currently, they're delaying by just taking the emotional portion of one of the barbells. But eventually, it will need to be, unless we, and this might be the case, we are in this for 40 years as a both emotional and literal conflict. They'll want the literal and emotional conflict to end. And the current two extremes are not great for mainstreamers to take, both because of the lobbies on either end that exist, but also because they're not great positions. So do I think mainstream Democrats is an example, which, by the way, I would say constitute a large portion of who will be governing for the next 10 years, hopefully, if we still have elections. They don't currently adopt one of the barbells other than emotionally. So I do think they would, and whether they're actively looking for it, adopt a moderate position, or let's call it an alternative position, that currently doesn't exist, 100%. And by the way, again, it's because it's become such a fervent, this is only true over the last 12 months, it's become uniquely fervent compared to before.
Okay. I mean, I disagree, but I guess we'll see. But I mean, like, this is the position that I occupy. If I ever have a nuanced conversation on this, this is generally the position I give. But the overwhelming amount of the discourse right now is hardcore pushing on one of the two sides for this. And so I don't
maybe
know.
Here's my desired call to action. It's like, if that's true, and I believe you on that, then the great thing that I think would be a change would be to shift the reactions that you have towards both sides toward this argument, maybe more forcefully than just the reaction itself. And the reason is, I think currently the way you react to this discourse provides apologetics for one side, whether you mean to or not, and doesn't provide an alternative to those who might be today or will be tomorrow looking for one. I'm not saying you're the only one, blah, 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 blah. But I do think if what you said is true, currently the way we approach this topic, even in the stream today, is aggressively about the extreme barbell and how they're acting and what they're saying without coherently, persistently, consistently shaping an alternative. And I think that shaping an alternative, again, could be extraordinarily compelling over the next 4 to 6 years, regardless of what pro-poly people say over the next month or two and what Israel does, is people are going to be looking to get out of this conversation at some point. And look, by the way, I think whether it's a streamer, whether it's alt media, whether it's the next democratically elected person via primary, none of them are taking strong position. None of the mainstream people are taking strong positions on this. We even see, for example, pro-Israeli politicians having to begin, other than the most extreme, to begin to walk back some of their most fervent support. So they're abandoning one side of the barbell. Where are they going to go? Like, let's take an example of a lot of the people in the I don't know that I want to, subscribe to what I'm about to say, but I'm wondering what you think. Where are a lot of the right-wing folks who are currently going through like an anti-Israel moment, whether or not it's, their extremism is justified on it, what position do you think they're going to take next? They don't really have one to take, right?
The anti-Israel people?
But on the right.
Probably their position is generally like just a full-on anti-Jew position, no?
No, the ones that were pro-Israel. So let's talk more mainstream Republicans who are beginning to critique Netanyahu, right? Where do they land?
They would probably just go to the kind of super isolationist mode that the populist conservative people are at.
True. I guess maybe some of them, for example, would be up for grabs for a middle ground, right? They're not going to go to the pro-Pali side. And they're a good example of what I think is a large portion of the populace that are going to be looking to unsubscribe from extremism on both sides for the next 12 to 72 months.
So I've been listening to this, and I just really am curious. When you say they're not going to go to the pro-Palestine side, what do you consider to be the pro-Palestine side here? Like the mainstream pro-Pali ask that most people in America have that are on that side that you would say are pro-Pali?
You're asking me?
Yes.
I should be curious to see what the polling says.
You don't know what the pro-Palestine side is?
Oh, sorry, hold on. Let me answer the question. I think there's two versions of the pro-Palestine side. There's the version that Destiny likes to paint as the only version, which is the Hassan, very extremist, very kind of anti-Israel and very excusing of Hamas version of things. But I think there's a second, much larger, maybe more silent pro-Palestine side, which is people who again are slightly lower information, have sympathies and kind of like visceral lizard brain reactions toward the people in Gaza, are now becoming extraordinarily skeptical of the Israeli government because more and more is coming, kind of to factual light for all sides. That thing is also to me pro-Palestine and large. It's not as identifiable. It's more minority. Vocal.
How would these Republican senators that you say, or congressmen, lawmakers, et cetera, politicians, influencers that you say are souring on Israel, how would they not fall into that camp?
Which one, the extreme one or the second one?
The other one that you just mentioned.
They would fall to the other one, but I don't think the other one would. I don't think that those people have a preferred policy. Like in Stephen's whole frame of like, oh, a lot of these people don't want to hear a reasonable solution. They just want the extremes. These people, I think, would be open because they might default to an extreme right now, or they might just be confused and empathetic towards Gazans. But I think they would appreciate a politician who can very clearly communicate, you know, kind of their anti-Netanyahu stance, which is even something Stephen has said repeatedly. They would still kind of think of Israel as a long-term ally and would not want to abandon them.
I guess the problem I'm having...
I just want to say, I don't want to hijack this too much, but like the reason why I don't agree with that is because Israel-Palestine is kind of complicated. I think people overcomplicate it, but it's kind of a complicated thing, and most Americans don't care about foreign policy. The only people that super care about Israel-Palestine are connected to it because they're either Jewish or Jew-adjacent, or they're old, and so they're just pro-Israel, or they're massively pro-Palestinian. But the reason why is because of all the other reasons they plug into it, not because they have a genuine care about foreign policy. So these people that are like disinterested middle ground people couldn't be persuaded to have a strong position on Israel because they just don't care because it's foreign policy. I don't think that you can ever connect them to a moderate position.
To piggyback on that, and this was kind of tying into what I was going to say, is that like the solutions that you say that are obvious, such as using the U.S. military in Gaza on the ground to distribute aid, those will not be supported by people who are just kind of ambivalent about these things, right? You need the strong support. Otherwise, the support of the silent majority would be just to be like isolationist.
Yeah,
like,
get us the fuck out. This is retarded. We don't want to waste our time with it. I think that's what the moderate... Because to help Israel and Palestine, you would need an extreme position. It doesn't have to be extremely like pro-Pali or pro-Israel, but it would have to be an extreme commitment. Like Clinton was making extreme commitments to try to solve that issue, and I just don't think you get people to give a fuck enough about it.
Blood, treasure, resources, boots on the ground. The first time the U.S. and the Hamas get into a firefight, that's it, right? People are going to be like, we need to get out of there, right? It's just not, it's not sustainable. Like these obvious solutions, in order to properly distribute aid, you need to occupy Gaza in a way that we did in Germany post-World War II.
I think,
Japan post-World
War II. I just want to interject because I think a lot's been said. So a lot's been said, and I want to, you know, kind of make sure I go to the source of the claim. I think both of you would have been right about the American polity and how much they cared 2 years ago. I think you guys are wrong as of now, and we've seen that in some of the polling that I've seen recently. For example, I think it's 53% to 56% of Democrats now say Israel-Palestine is an issue that's important to them, and 2 years ago it was like between 13% and 20%.
That does not mean that it's important enough for them to have boots.
I agree with you. I'm saying though, if we go by process, your initial claim is now wrong. A lot of people have begun to care dramatically about this issue.
Yes, but I don't
think
I
know for a fact.
My initial claim was that the people that care about it, they don't care about it because it's a riveting foreign policy issue. They care because they've connected to it either through the Jew pipeline, either through the old person that cares about Israel pipeline, or through the crazy pro-Pali, pro-Islam or whatever fucking pipeline. That it's not because they've connected to a foreign policy issue that's like genuinely compelling to them.
I don't think anyone connects to foreign policy issues that are genuinely compelling to them. And I think
argument.
They still want... Huh?
Yeah, that's my whole argument.
Yeah, but they still wind up prescribing to, and this is where I think this is like the job of politicians, right? Politicians will promote some version of a solution. And again, this is where I think there isn't one for this polity, portion of the polity. And people will default ascribe to it if it feels like it's generally in line with their soft view. And so if a lot of people have a soft view, this is my whole argument, if it's a vocal majority that has a soft view on this, I agree with Wick, your point that like, okay, am I suggesting a very expensive thing? I don't know. And
it's an extreme thing. What you're suggesting is...
I don't think what I'm saying is extreme at all.
It is.
And again, No,
you might not think it. Like you keep using words like, "Oh, how?" Like
I'll put it this way. Hold on, sorry. Let me just put this.
I'm being good faith. You can't just say things and then you are.
Hold on. Am I not being good faith?
Honest. You have to.
Am I saying that I'm sure about the solution, Wick? Did I say?
I don't.
Did I say I was being sure? Did I say I was sure that this would work? No, I said we could try this. I even said to Stephen.
Is whether or not the certain
critique me more specifically, right? Critique me more specifically. When you say that you think my solution of aid is extreme, you and I could maybe brainstorm something we both agree wouldn't be that extreme or as risky as maybe what you imagined. I said I'm not stuck to some budget or
you
some
keep
specific.
Saying that. I don't know if we can when it comes to this region without extreme measures being applied. Again, my destiny's argument, if this entirely coincides, but that the American populace is not willing or in a place to do anything such as what you suggest.
Do you think that that's changing?
Workable solutions is restricting aid or limiting aid to Israel based on X, Y, or Z, right? Like, and people have a whole bunch of different things that they would condition aid on, or a lot of people are.
Do you think that's changing?
Like, entirely, all these things, right? So when you say that we could make a reasonable solution to the food issue in Gaza, I'm telling you that the American public is not in a position that they want to put forth the resources where that, like, that would...
Do you think that might be changing? Do you think that that might be changing? How much the, let's call it, vocal majority or soft view American would be willing to...
I don't see evidence of it changing enough or fast enough.
I just see slightly different evidence. I'm not holding some sort of strong position on the version of it. No, I'm not. I'm not.
Okay.
Wick's making a face for those who can't.
I am just making a face. I came in here initially.
I appreciate the pushback, but again, I'm pushing back because I'm saying I'm not here claiming there's a certain type of budget. I'm saying there's, we want to have certain upstream.
Can you give me a reason why people would want to continue to give aid to Israel at this point? Why would someone want to continue to be an ally and have a strong relationship with Israel? Can you give me that argument?
Yeah, I think there are three reasons. One is they believe that Israel is our strongest, both past, present, and future ally in the region. Two, they have historic...
Just to clarify that point, you think because of just tradition. That is an argument that someone would make.
I said and future.
Yes, but I'm asking you, I guess, let me rephrase the question. I'm asking you, what would the argument from someone who wants to maintain a relationship...
Are you being good faith with that question? What do you mean? If they believed that Israel would be our potential long-term ally, why wouldn't... I mean, I could make that argument. They could say because of religious affiliation.
Well, they would want us to be an ally because we are already their ally, which I guess...
I said that they were our past, current, and... our best past, current, and future option. That's what I said.
Okay. Second point.
Second would be the historical. So there's, you know, kind of historical and traditional sympathies towards the populace and some sort of obligation driven off of those sympathies. Why'd you make a face?
No, I'm listening. I'm
no, but you made a face. I just want to know why.
I'm not sure what the difference is between your point one and point two. Like, so
best past, current, and future ally is not different to you than versus our historic sympathies. Why are those not different to you?
Okay, I guess it's not different.
Those are very different. Whoa, hold on. How are those not different?
Like, I can understand this evangelical argument that might take place, right? Or people who are sympathetic to the Jewish ethnicity and things like that. But it would just tie into the first one. But make the third point, please.
The third point would be geopolitical, which is they believe that it's the best place. It's the best basis on which to recraft kind of the Middle East. So if we think about kind of our relationship to the GCC, a lot of it, I think, is only possible because we've also normalized relations between those countries and Israel. And so you have to kind of have like the base nature of that conflict diminishing before you can invest in the Middle East. And, you know, I'm in the tech industry. A tremendous amount of venture capital now is raised downstream or upstream in the Middle East. And I think a lot of that benefited from the initial kind of calming of Israel and the GCC in geopolitics.
Okay. I don't know. I just don't understand, and maybe this is my failure, like why we would push so hard against, right? Because you're right. The geopolitical side is probably the strongest side here, right? You would agree with that? Of those three arguments,
yeah.
The geopolitical thing? Like, we get real benefits from having Israel as an ally. And look, by all means, I think that what they're doing over there is horrendous. It's horrific. And from a moral stance, we probably should start limiting aid or conditioning aid. We do need to kind of divest ourselves in certain ways. But if we're going to make that argument, we have to realize that that comes with extreme costs to our interests in the region. It comes with extreme costs to tech.
So those costs are already happening, right?
Extreme costs.
So let's talk about that, because that's a great point. I don't want to go too far. So let's dissect that, because that's a great one. So again, I'm in tech. Two things happened with the relationship of tech and the GCC countries, because we already, venture capital already has like kind of a many decades relationship to Israel for funding. And there are a lot of tech companies based out of, Tel Aviv as well.
Well, yeah, one of the, I think other than Taiwan, those chips we use in all our tech and stuff, the second place we get them other than Taiwan is Israel. Right?
Not only that, but a lot of startup software that we use is just, again, venture capital. There are a lot of venture capitalists who are who commute between the two nations. So, but over the past, let's call it, I'd say this is about 6 years. After normalization, you know, kind of with the GCC, a lot of venture capitalists began to raise money. And these are firms like Andreessen Horowitz and General Catalyst. A lot of these funds that are kind of traditional American mainstream venture capital firms began to have deep relationships with Qatar, UAE, Saudi Arabia as their LPs, the limited partners in their funds. This is already causing two dynamics in tech that are, I think, underrated to the tech industry, and whether or not that matters in the long term, who knows. But the first is you don't have nearly as much travel going to the region. So a tremendous amount of both Israeli Americans or people who were doing a lot of business in Israel, but also doing a lot of business in Saudi Arabia, the UAE, they've stopped entirely, like cold turkey. So a lot of the capital that, by the way, takes about 5 to 10 years to deploy, so we won't see this effect, is not being raised anymore. You see this a little bit in the AI space, but a lot of those commitments are so large and already happened in kind of perfect timing. But now you're not going to see the $10 billion fundraise by some of these venture capital firms or $12 billion.
To be clear, you're arguing this as a way, as a reason to discount our the geopolitical gains that we get. Or
it's a reason to think the geopolitical gains are already being severely impacted.
Okay. Do you think that it would probably be less impacted if we were able to provide Israel with enough weaponry and security to properly stabilize that area in that region?
No.
No? You don't think that
we would Israel?
Hold on. Yes, Israel specifically. You don't think that if Israel was able to make to normalize relationships with the countries around it, such as Saudi Arabia, which where they were on a path to doing and things like that, you don't think that if they were able to make that area more stable, that you wouldn't see continued investment in the
Sorry, you said you didn't say make it more stable. You said give them more weapons for the goal of making it more stable.
In order to give them more resources.
Well, let me be more clear to you then. I don't think giving them more weapons would make the area more secure. There's two reasons for this that I would say are like causal or could be causal. The first would be, I think the reason you have normalization between the GCC countries and Israel is somewhat preconditioned on this notion that Israel doesn't get too powerful. Not literally, but I think one of the reasons, for example, Saudi Arabia is willing over the past however many years to normalize was they thought, okay, we're also all economically getting intertwined, and this isn't going to become a nation that rules us necessarily. There's a coalition of Arab and Muslim countries, so they're somewhat like conditionally okay right now, and I think there's a bar at which they go, hey.
We also shared an enemy, right?
And they share an enemy, Iran, exactly.
Yes, exactly.
So that was going to be my second point, which is that if Israel becomes too equipped, then I don't think that means regional conflicts necessarily decrease. In fact, in their mission to secure, we have seen they're very willing to destabilize the region in a way that is, again, to you know, kind of my overall point, completely stopped you know, kind of venture capital travel to the Middle East, completely stopped the fundraising environment, you know, that otherwise these businesses are enjoying. And by the way, hold on, one more point. Okay. You're also seeing the tourism, this is the influencer industry, this is the tech industry, this is like rich people in the world began to use that region as their playground, and that's also stopping. So these are negative effects to kind of the economics and geopolitics of the region.
I guess I'll just tell you why I disagree with this before we move on. I disagree because before October 7th happened and the Hamas attack, things were getting more stable, right, in that region. For years, they were getting more stable.
In the region? No.
Yes. Well, in that region, in the Israel region, absolutely.
In the Israel region? Well, hold on. What do you mean specifically? Be very particular.
Sure. I guess I don't know exactly the geography to describe it, but around that area, like, so we hadn't had as many, there hadn't been as, like, Israel was just much more stable.
Stephen can correct me if I'm wrong, but the places I'm talking about, again, are the GCC countries and, like, Tel Aviv. These places were not getting worse.
We're not getting worse or better, think, or yeah. What?
Yeah.
In prior to October 7th, Tel Aviv and the GCC countries in general were more stable and getting more stable.
I think so, yes. With
okay.
Some
what were you saying then?
Like Yemen, right? And the Houthis, right?
Right. But that's not what we're talking about, but sure.
Yeah. And I think Iran's mission in that region was to destabilize them and things like that. But
sure.
They were largely, again, compared to the past, becoming more stable. But October...
Wait, hold on.
One of the reasons that they did October 7th, or one of the stated reasons, I think, the ones that a lot of people say that they did, was to destabilize it again, to prevent the former further normalization, right? To prevent the well, Hamas and Iran specifically, because Hamas
we don't know. Not that I'd be surprised, but we don't know that Iran was particularly activating towards that attack. I'm sure they loved it, the regime, but like,
well, that's one of the theories.
We want to be particular, right? I mean, the other theory is that Netanyahu, you know, did a false flag. I'm not
prove it. So, probably not.
I can't prove that Netanyahu did a false flag, but you know, I don't think that's helpful.
Yeah, but I think we have a lot more evidence, right?
I don't think that's true for that attack. But either way, I don't get the point that you're trying to make using that.
What I'm trying to make is that we were supplying in Israel. We were giving them aid, right? We had the Abraham Accords come up. We had all these things.
We were also normalizing with the GCC. We by the way,
Israel, hold on just real quick. Hold on, please. Israel was not destabilizing the region, right? During that time, you can argue after October 7th, they bombed Syria, they bombed other countries, right, things, and you could probably make that argument a little more compellingly. But prior to that, at least in the last 5 to 10 years in that region, they were not the destabilizing factor.
It was Iran, of course.
Yes. So all again, right. Your argument initially was that us giving them resources, weapons, etc., they would necessarily start to destabilize that region. But
I didn't say necessarily. I said that it wouldn't necessarily do it, right? So again, we have to be specific here. I don't think giving weapons would necessarily lead to the mission statement that you gave of giving those weapons or destabilization.
Not in and of itself alone. There would have to be other things.
And it would potentially fail, which we can see because Israel is not exactly a stabilizing force, doesn't do things lightly, and you know has been, by the way, one of my personal interpretation of what's happening in Lebanon and what's continuing to happen with how Netanyahu is pressuring Iran is the current Israeli government doesn't want stabilization. They believe that when they're the underdog and there is a populace that is, you know, kind of well fed to hate them, they benefit because they get to try to portray themselves as being geopolitically attacked. The way I've put this to a friend is the unfortunate thing about, you know, kind of what's going on right now and again in Lebanon is if in 5 years there are resistance movements in southern Lebanon against an occupying Israeli force. I'm not sure either of those things will be true, but let's say they were. They will look to Westerners like terrorist attacks, even though right now we're upset with what they're doing in Lebanon, right? So in other words, they're setting themselves up.
Attacks have been done to Israel.
We're
to Lebanon.
Gonna move on because this guy's been here for like 2 hours now. Yeah. So we'll give Wick and you a final word. Get your last word out.
Go ahead.
Wick, you want to go first?
I guess on this argument is that I think that there is a lot of reasons to want to limit aid to Israel and change our relationship. But my concern, especially with a lot of things that you've been saying, is that you have no real path to do that. And every time I look and kind of scratch into the surface of what you actually want, it's always kind of going to lead necessarily to a situation where Israel is either A, dissolved and
what like, I said nothing me. About I, what I'm what thing did I say that leads to Israel being dissolved?
So
what a bunch of horseshit
you want. These things will necessarily lead to
no aid in Gaza. Aid in Gaza.
It's words.
You can't even let me finish.
Do we let people lie in their final words? Destiny doesn't like. Stephen doesn't like when people do this to him.
I'm not your girlfriend. I get to actually finish when we're having inter relationships and things like that. Okay.
That was good.
This is the problem, right? The things that you are advocating for are going to lead to worse outcomes because whether you realize
aid in Gaza,
whether it's going to lead to worse outcomes happen or not, that's what I believe will happen. I think that you give infinite charity to one side and no charity to the other, and we have to recognize that this is a maximally complicated situation that is. There is no simple solution here. Everything that we want to do in there is going to take so much blood, treasure, and time from the U.S. It's probably not worth doing. And that's the long and short of it, man. We got other fish to fry.
All right, Shervin, go ahead. Your final words.
Yeah, I don't think that trying to go through maybe resource intensive or emotionally intensive movements to provide aid in Gaza would necessarily lead to the dissolution of Israel. I think that's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard in my life. I think we are afraid to do things, and yet things are going to happen anyway. And so one of the things we have to decide is, yes, it might mean investment. It might mean, getting a coalition together, both domestically and internationally. It might mean the cost of lives, but lives and money are already being spent. Geopolitics is already being ruined. And so one of the things that I want to happen is that we start to make proactive choices instead of being, you know, as a polity. And when I say the polity, I mean United States domestically, but then also a lot of people internationally who don't like what's happening now and also don't like what the extreme barbell of any side would vote for. Would look and be willing to invest in another option, somewhat because we already have these consequences anyway because of the powers that be in every situation doing what they want to do. And so I think instead what I'm suggesting is people would look for a different solution, would look for a middle ground solution, if only we would more definitionally provide it. Sure about any of the things I've said on this conversation. I think they're better ideas than what's happening today. And I think they'd move us towards behavior change in these regions that might lead to better outcomes. And that's what I've got to say.
Notice how you have to finish with me, right?
Thank you.
Because I let them finish.
Good job.
You're welcome.
It's been great, Shervin. We'll have you next time. Goodbye.
Thanks, Wick. Thanks, Steven.
Okay. Ciao.
Yeah, I just basically wanted to show and prove to everyone that I did shave my beard. So I don't know if you want to put me up on screen for a minute.
We did. We saw. Good job. We're proud of you. You're beautiful.
Love you all.
You're always beautiful. Oh. And yeah. Thank you so much. Bye. You wanted this move.